I'm with Chris Anderson, executive editor of Wired Magazine and author of The Long Tail, perhaps the most important book of the decade for small businesses and entrepreneurs. I've never made a recommendation like this before, so for those of you who know me, please do take note. This is a book for the ages. But Mr. Anderson does build a compelling case for what the future of business looks like. His book outlines more than just a vision. It's a major trend that's happening now and that is critically important for the welfare of your small business in the years to come. First, a quick summary of the long tail so our listeners have a flavor, a baseline to work from. The Internet is transforming us from a mass market blockbuster culture into a world of infinite niches. Those blockbusters and hits and all the major brands that we all know so well live in the head of the curve, a relatively small number of high sales volume products. Beyond this industrial revolution created world, countless niches form an ever-growing long-tail distribution, so-called because the tail is infinitely long compared to the head. The future lies for us, the small business person, in the long tail of niche markets. Market opportunities abound and will be growing, in fact, for those who understand and use what Mr. Anderson describes as the three driving forces of the long tail. Driver number one, and these are critical. If you understand these, you're going to know how to use the long tail once you've read the book and our interview, which will be covering specifically small business marketing using the long tail. But I digress. Driver number one is the tools of production. Hardware and software have put product creation into the hands of everyone. The result, an exponential explosion in niche products. Not all of them great, of course, but an explosion in the number of products that are available. Driver number two is the Internet aggregators. Aggregators pull tens of millions of niche products together, all on offer, all in one spot. Think iTunes. iTunes aggregates more music than any other retailer ever could. At a more practical small business online level, think Google AdSense. Google pulls millions of niche publishers together, all on offer to advertisers. Your sites are, in essence, products. Products that are offered, websites that are offered for advertising. Advertisers, everyone from General Motors to Stan's local body shop, are the customers. And for the first time, they can filter through Google's aggregation of millions of publishers and place ads across a wide variety of sites related to what they want to sell, to who they want to sell it to. Prior to this, GM basically advertised on NBC. That may be a bit of an overstatement, but there is one heck of an extreme shift going on. Driver number three is the filtering software itself that connects supply and demand. Filters anything from Google search to those who bought this also bought that recommendations, empower consumers to sort out the junk and find well-targeted, high-quality products that have been produced by the first driving force, i.e., the tools of production, and aggregated by the second driving force. For example, are you planning a vacation to Anguilla? Do a Google search to find great sites about Anguilla. You'll see ads on the websites about Anguilla. Click, your interest earns income for both Google and the publisher of that small business site. Mr. Anderson's book uses excellent big company examples from Google, Rhapsody, iTunes, Amazon, Netflix, and eBay. But there is much more to the long tail than big business. For example, the tail within a tail that he describes needs to be understood by every small business person. And that's where we'll be picking up with Mr. Anderson on this interview, taking the long tail to the small business world. The long tail can be far more than an aggregator of small businesses as one of millions of products that are on offer by larger businesses. In fact, your small business has its own long tail, and you can not only be an aggregatee, you can be an aggregator. And with that, it's time to introduce you to Chris Anderson, executive editor of Wired and author of The Long Tail. Okay, Mr. Anderson, and thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. As I was saying, your book has important ramifications for every small business person, not just the dot-com way out there digital savvy companies, but for the bread and butter small businesses of the world, from dentists in California to rental agents in Venice. And of course, I'm a huge fan. I say that unashamedly. It's an honor and a thrill to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
First question, in your book, you talk about the long tail within a long tail. You call this curves within curves within curves, and I quote, "The long tail is made of many, many mini-tails, each of which is its own little world." And that hit me like a ton of bricks. It says to me that every small business has its own long tail, and we certainly see that here at SiteSell. In the keyword distribution graphs of our small business sites, our clients create real content-driven theme sites, for example, a site on, say, the Caribbean island of Anguilla. Take that niche site, and it is found by 8,000 search terms at Google. The top 20 keywords account for 25 to 30% of its traffic, but the remaining 7,980 account for all the rest. Those searchers are highly niche, and therefore highly targeted and interested visitors. If the small business person with a site about Anguilla lives in the bigger long tail, you know, the more global long tail that you talk about, is this keyword distribution, in fact, what you refer to when you talk about the mini tails, the tails within a tail, and does it provide the small business person with interesting opportunities to not only be aggregated by big business, the aggregatees, if you will, but can small businesses not only become aggregators, can they not work the tail, in other words, in both directions? Does that fit with your model? Have I read that correctly?
You nailed it. Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Obviously, we need to make a little sort of definitional, you know, clarity here. Some small businesses are very focused on a niche, and you know, and go as deep as that niche goes. Other small businesses are just small versions of large businesses, where they're not necessarily offering a differentiated commodity. They're just local, say. So you know, my local hardware store is no more niche than the local Home Depot. It just happens to be closer and has less selection and higher prices. So I mean, I presume in this case we're talking about small businesses that have a very focused niche and aren't just exploiting their geographic proximity to their customer base.
Yeah, small businesses that have a niche or that can slice themselves so that they carve out niches. Your local hardware store can create a do-it-your-own home basement type of site, can create a bunch of theme sites, and of course he will start to get found by this incredible long tail. But in general, without stretching the point, sites that lend themselves well, and as you know, the number of niches are not going down in this world. They're only going to expand exponentially.
Exactly.
And within each of those niches, there are just this incredible variety. Who would dream that somebody would be searching for Little Scrub Island, an off island off a Caribbean island of Anguilla that not many people have heard about to begin with, you know?
Exactly. No, I think that's right. And I think that one of the big opportunities for small businesses, and actually, I'm going to actually pull this back. I'm going to say it's one of the big opportunities for everybody, and I'll explain why in a minute. I think one of the biggest opportunities is the what we call the sort of the mega, you know, the niche to mega niche, which is to rather than going broad, rather than trying to be everything to everybody, to find a very focused area that is not, you know, sort of fully mined by others, and to be the master of that niche, to take it, you know, as far as it goes, recognizing that there's no, you know, that it wouldn't make sense in a single geography. I mean, you know, if your niche was, you know, say, you know, Japanese woodcuts, you know, there's probably, you know, outside of Manhattan, there's probably no single geographic area in the United States where there would be a market big enough to be the world's expert on Japanese woodcuts. But if you're tapping a global market because, you know, you have the web presence as well, then there really is a market for, you know, the consummate English language expert in Japanese woodcuts. That is a perfect example of a niche that's neither too big to be differentiated or too small to be commercially interesting. And there are thousands or millions of those. And the reason I say it's not just an opportunity for small businesses is that in many ways it's what big businesses need to do when they go online as well. When I think of just our own, I work for Condé Nast, and we're mm-hmm. we're one of America's largest magazine publishers. We have classic mass market products. We're in the blockbuster business. As we go online, we're not just competing with a relatively small number of other mass market magazines. We're competing with 27 million blogs. And the competition is incredibly niche. And so to stand out from that competition, we can't be everything to everybody. Instead, we have to find our own niches. And so even we, big business, has to, as you go online and you're competing with small niche businesses, we have to become niche. We have to find places that where we can differentiate ourselves from the amateur sites, the one-person operations, the two-person operations, the multitude of competitors who are laser-focused on things that make no sense whatsoever in our mainstream publications, but are exactly what the Internet's all about.
Laser-focused is a great term because we know that small businesses, let's say you're sole proprietor, 2, 3, 4 employees, don't belong in the big head, not unless they've got about $20 million of VC to start with in their wallets. So where do they belong? Probably not even at the inflection point, but somewhere down to the right of that long tail. And the farther out they get there, instead of about Italy, instead of about Rome, if you are the guy that knows Puglia like the back of his hand, inside outwards, and writes about it with a passion and a voice, Condé Nast is going to have a hard time winning that particular little corner of Italy.
Google doesn't discriminate between us. Google will find, if I enter the words, whatever that corner of Italy was,
yep.
if I enter those words into Google, Google will find the little guy as easily as it finds the big guy. As a matter of fact, it's probably more likely to find the little guy because the little guy is more quote-unquote relevant.
Absolutely, because Google, and this gets to one of your driver number threes, is getting smarter and smarter, and not just about relevance now, but about quality. And quality is about tracking how do humans respond to a website before, during, and after a visit. And if this was a great website that connected in a profound way, humans respond in a series of ways. Everybody talks about Google PageRank, but that's just one of hundreds of ways that Google can track off-page behavior. So Google is about recognizing the quality. And let's get into that as an aggregator. Also, Google is both a driver number three, a distributor, a pusher down of the long tail, as well as an aggregator in terms of those type of websites, if you will, are products. They are
right.
products in that they are advertising vehicles for advertisers to now come in and use Google's tools and say, buy me an across-the-board advertising spread on every website about Italy, or I want to raise the laser down to the southern regions of Italy. So Google's job, in fact, is to find quality and to send people who want more and more exotic Italian vacations farther and farther down that long tail. So that's a great example that you pick up on.
Yes.
It brings up the question of search engine optimization, which is, I'm sure, a term you've known and
yes.
that I have disliked for a long time. To simplify, since the first days of search engine, the object has been to game the engines and get to number one for what we would call today, or using your terminology, the big tail, the head of
the head.
Tail, I should say.
The
Try
head,
and
yeah.
win the war for the 20 or 30 most in-demand keywords, and yet a really great content site will, in fact, drive most of its traffic from the 8,000 other keywords that it gets found for by accident, on purpose, if you know what I mean.
I do indeed.
Classical SEO has evolved since the days of just on-page keyword jamming, of course, but it still focuses basically on the hot keywords and on somehow influencing Google to give me a high ranking for these 20 or 30 words. It's becoming harder and harder, but I know at a spot in your book you talk about the truncated long curve, and I couldn't help but thinking that a great idea for Google, if it had the computing power, and geez, it probably does, would be actually to draw a sort of a long tail for every single site that's out there. SEO sites would show this truncated curve at about 20 or 30 words. It would all of a sudden just drop vertically.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, what implications do you think this whole, the long tail of keywords has for things like search engine optimization, for gaming the engines?
Gosh, that is a good question. This is one of those instances where you have thought this through better than I have. What you describe, it sounds accurate. I think, you know, to the extent that search engine optimization is about climbing higher up the tail than your content deserves, that clearly becomes harder and harder
for your mega hit keywords, if you will.
Right, exactly. As people's searching behavior becomes more sophisticated, I mean, obviously this all begins with the search query itself.
Mm-hmm.
If you enter a general search query, the search engine optimizers will always be competing for that business, and your results will vary as a result.
And when Google dances, of course, you're completely vulnerable because you're dependent on all of your traffic coming from 20 or 30 keywords.
Right.
Whereas when you're creating these great sites, like basically keeping it real and getting found for 8,000 words, it really doesn't matter when Google dances to try and knock out the spammy SEO guys who are just flooding the net with junk.
Right. So my point is that it starts with the searcher. If searchers continue to enter general terms, then I don't see a big difference. I don't see a big change in the search engine optimization market. However, if the consumer lesson from the long tail is to type in more and more focused queries, looking for very, very specific things, and as they became more and more aware of the variety that's out there.
The tail within the tail.
Exactly. Rather than typing in Italian travel into their site, you know, typing in, and you know, at this point you need to give me an example.
Puglia hotels.
Puglia hotels, exactly. Then, you know, at that point, then the shift in consumer behavior is going to lead to a breakdown of the search engine optimizing, market, because exactly as you say, the relevant sites will be the ones that actually do provide content that addresses that specific interest.
And you'd made the point in your book that, of course, the farther you go down that right tail, the more sub-niche you will, if you get, the tighter the bond between the supplier of whatever it is being supplied, whether it's music or content sites, and the person who seeks that.
Yeah.
And that, again, is an advantage that small business people have over big business. And I mean, I think
exactly.
Even the great example was a former employee at Wired who formed his own band and did all this himself, attracted their own following, and then said, well, wait a minute, why do we need the labels for?
Yeah, exactly.
He used the long tail brilliantly, and I think actually there's a whole discipline here to be called long tail marketing somewhere in here.
And it's been coined for sure. I mean, you're absolutely right, which is to say that that people now, you know, people gravitate towards true expertise. They're looking for, you know, tastemakers and guides in areas, and they prefer to find actual individuals rather than just sort of generic, you know, corporate voices.
Exactly.
And those individuals tend to be actual people who have a very narrow sphere of influence, a very narrow sphere of expertise. And they're all, you know, of course, they're all equally findable right now. So, you know, it's interesting to watch something like, you know, something as simple as, digital camera shopping. You know, the old model of digital camera shopping would be that you'd go into a consumer electronics store or camera store, and you'd, you know, and a salesperson who may or may not know anything about the products would sell you something, and that would be it. And then maybe if you were really sophisticated, you might look at Consumer Reports. The next model would be that you'd go on Amazon, and you would see what was the best-selling one, and you'd read the editorial reviews, and then you'd read the ratings and the customer reviews, and then you'd make a decision based on that. That even newer model would be that you just go to Google, and you would very quickly find, you know, something like, you know, a digital photography site where it has not only got incredibly in-depth reviews by the most obsessive experts, plus loads of really sophisticated comments, is completely up to date, It is, it isn't just pulling from one set of prices. It actually knows where, what the prices are everywhere. And, you would probably feel better informed through that niche site than you had through either of the two former alternatives.
That forms a bond with that reader to a point where now that site publisher simply has a choice of monetization options ahead of them. A common mistake for small businesses, of course, is they decide first how they're going to make money. And in fact, in today's world, it's what do I know a lot about? What am I passionate about?
Exactly.
Create that great content in the long tail. Find your proper spot along the long tail. And you will form that bond, and then the world is your oyster. There are a wide variety of ways to monetize beyond that. And again, there's a lot of important implications in the book for small business. And like we were talking about, more than just being, I think, aggregated by the big guys, you can aggregate all of these little people that are interested in a variety of features of cameras to the point where they totally just say, this is the person I want to be doing business with.
Exactly. And if you actually go to one of those digital photography sites, you'll find in the message boards and the comments, they're incredibly vibrant. The people who are truly passionate about about photography are not, going to the general interest sites. They're not even participating in the Amazon customer reviews. They're hanging out in these very narrow affinity sites. Where they feel like they're amongst their peers, and that is where you get the most sophisticated audience. And what's interesting is that those audiences are now quite large. That you may think of high-end digital photography being a niche, but on a global basis, we're talking millions of people.
Exactly. There are not enough to support your local neighborhood camera shop, but when your market becomes the world, you can earn a very good living with a great site about that. Of course, if you have a horrible site, and that brings us to a point that you brought up, driver number one, the tools of easy production, of course, puts the same tools into the hands of, to be gentle, the less capable. And so there is an awful lot of junk out there in the long tail. And that brings us to driver number three. The goal, of course, ultimately is to be found. And like I said, I can envision an entire specialty called long tail marketing evolving out of this. The filters from search engines and recommendation services. You gave just a brilliant example that I showed my daughter, who's interested in music and business, about how a group, I think it was the second one, what was the name of the band, the second music example you gave?
It started with Britney Spears and then it went to, I think, Pink or No Doubt?
And it was just the way they worked it through the variety of services, and then it got play on Yahoo Music, and then they found it.
Now you're asking. Was that?
I've got your book so heavily earmarked and dog-eared, I probably won't find it in time. But I know it was the second example that I happened to.
Let me grab the book just a moment.
And anyway, we know the one that we're talking about. But there is an art form that's going to evolve to get found.
Wasn't My Chemical Romance, was it?
Sorry. Yes.
My Chemical Romance. Yeah.
Exactly. And search engines are, of course, like one of those filters that we talked about, recommendation services. The junk has to get sorted out from the great stuff. Any ideas on small businesses with great products, whether that product's a website, a niche documentary, movie, ideas on how they can put themselves into the click path, basically,
sure.
of those
yeah.
filters without
Absolutely.
Artificial manipulation?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's a good question. So you need to know a little bit about how Google works. And the answer is that Google measures relevance not on the basis of semantic analysis of the page or any editorial judgment about what's being offered, but instead measuring the wisdom of crowds, measuring what other mm-hmm. sites thought of that site as defined by incoming links. So the way to get noticed is to be linked to. And the way to get links to is to participate in the conversation. So let's just take blogs for as an example. In any niche, there are blogs that are focused on that niche. Those blogs have high page rank because they are focused and are read and are authoritative, to use the parlance. And the name of the game is to get those blogs to link to you. So you need to ask yourself, how would you get blogs to link to you? And that you know, that largely involves them, A, first knowing about you, and B, you offering something of value to them.
Provide great content.
Either something differentiated, or news, or just you know, having earned their respect by reading them and, you know, and commenting on their sites and otherwise engaging in the conversation with them. So I think, you know, for any niche provider, you know, their first job is to find out who are the influentials in my category, who are people reading in this space, and how do I get on their radar screen? And the answer is not press releases, it's not PR. It's not advertising necessarily. It's participating in the conversation. It's a peer-to-peer market out there, and you need to, if you want to be noticed, you need to notice them.
That's exactly what we tell our clients. We have 20-some-odd thousand small business clients who create theme-based content sites, who blog, who basically deliver content. And as you say, Google is about finding quality. Not just through Google PR and inbound links, but by tracking, for example, does this site Anguilla get mentioned in influential forums? Is it quoted by the Anguilla government as a link? There's hundreds of ways that Google tracks this. But now extrapolate that into other areas, into, say, Amazon's filters, into Netflix. If you like this film, you'd like this film. Does it all boil down to a very simple, and you said it, does it all boil down to basically differentiate yourself in a quality way, and the filters are basically getting smarter and smarter enough that they figured this stuff out?
You know, I wish it were as simple as that. I mean, differentiation is a necessary but not sufficient condition. In other words, you need to do it, but it's not enough. You need to differentiate, and you need to be noticed so that that word-of-mouth snowball can start rolling.
You need to do something before you can actually reach the tipping point.
God, we're using every metaphor every cliche in the book at this point. Yeah, so obviously differentiate. That's a good start. Then get noticed, and that is, you know, and that means, you know, I there's lots of ways. In the Amazon reviews, that just means, you know, drive people to those, you know, to the product using affiliate links or, you know, external sources to drive, you know, it's very hard to manipulate Amazon from within. It's much easier to manipulate Amazon from outside by driving traffic to a specific product using things you can control, like blogs and comments and, you know, not spam, but actually participating in a relevant way in communities that might be interested in that product. That, you know, then that will drive people to that Amazon product. Some of them will buy, some of them will leave reviews, some of them will leave ratings, and then the kind of, you know, the positive feedback effect within the Amazon recommendation system kicks in.
Very specific answer, and I've taken way too much of your time. So one last question, this one a more expansive one, the future. Where are the next great long-tail opportunities? What will the long-tail look like in 2 years? What should small businesses be doing today? And I don't mean those as literal questions. I'm just sort of giving you some stimulating sort of fodder to tell me what should small businesses be doing in thinking about the long-tail? Because I buy into this 100%. I literally think you have written the book of the decade, and that small business needs to understand this and needs to get it in a profound way. They need to read your book. They need to reread it. And if they haven't dog-eared it the way I've dog-eared it to the point that I couldn't find which band it was, I've got so many pages folded, they need to read it again.
That's very kind. Thank you.
No, it is an important work. What should small business be doing besides reading this book after they've read this book?
Yeah. Well, I think the simple answer is this. They probably already know their business pretty well, and they probably already, and, you know, and the ones we're talking to probably already do have a niche, and which they probably know pretty well. I think at this point, the opportunity lies largely in looking at the long tail customer. You know, looking outside of their existing customer base and finding and trying to find the people who might be interested, you know, who maybe are interested, but just haven't discovered this merchant, this small business, and that means, participating out there in this conversation called the global marketplace. It's all about word of mouth right now. Everything that's driving demand is sort of less and less about institutional power and advertising and PR and top-down messaging, and more about individual power and word of mouth and amateur tastemakers who have, extraordinary influence because people respect peers more than they respect authority figures these days.
Mm-hmm.
From a simple sort of, taking your business to the next level, it's all about participating in that conversation that's happening out there, whether, with you or without you. In terms of starting new businesses, I think that, the day is still young. We look at, if you look at something like iTunes owns that market, iTunes is the classic one-size-fits-all product. There's so many opportunities for more focused, genre level, music sites on classical or jazz or national sites ones that offer much richer information about the artists and about the music. We're just scraping the surface at this point. Obviously it's how you both sort of can have a focused, differentiated, niche music site and be findable. For those who are starting in a place like iTunes is an unanswered question at this point, since you need to do both. But as you say, the small businesses can be micro aggregators, but they need to be in turn aggregated by the big aggregators. That is true and not yet evident how to do it, but I think that's where the opportunities lie.
Mr. Anderson, I thank you very, very much for your time and for a wonderful book. For those who, there will be a link on the site, longtail.sitesell.com, over to Amazon. I can't recommend it enough, and I can't thank you enough for your time, sir.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Those are smart questions.
Appreciate it. Have a good evening.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.